This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight...
The people are now showing that they are determined to make sure that the playing field in terms of the electoral process is leveled.
That's Job Sikala, an opposition candidate for Zimbabwe's parliament, at a protest outside the election commission in Harare. Details next. Also, international forensic scientists have arrived in the Gambia to identify victims who died under the rule of dictator Yahya Jammeh. And Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has signed an executive order to freeze assets of individuals involved in corruption cases. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story: Zimbabwe's main opposition coalition, the MDCT Alliance, brought business in Zimbabwe's capital to a standstill when thousands of people came out to march in support of the alliance's demand for transparency in the printing of ballot papers. Reporter Kuzai Zanawash has more details.
These people are among thousands marching in the streets of Harare Wednesday. They are backing the MDC Alliance's effort to press the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, or ZEC, to give in to its demands. Blessed Mbwanda, a student at Midland State University, was among the marchers.
I couldn't find an internship placement in the industries. It clearly shows that things are absolutely down. There's nothing at all that is going on in Zimbabwe, and we should do our part and inspire the revolution and remove ZANU-PF. ZANU-PF is trying to collude with ZEC to rig the election.
Job Sikala is the alliance candidate for the Zengeza West parliamentary post. He says the huge turnout today is telling of what's yet to come.
They turned in their numbers because basically it shows that victory is certain. The people are now showing that they are determined to make sure that the playing field in terms of the electoral process is leveled.
Sikala highlights some of the alliance's demands.
We want the voters' roll to be provided for to the alliance with the pictures of everyone who is in the registered voters' roll. Also, we want the removal of ghost voters who have been found to be 250,000 in the voters' roll. The chairperson of the commission becomes impartial in terms of conducting these forthcoming elections.
The alliance also wants its members to monitor the printing of the ballot papers, their storage and transportation to and from the polling stations on polling day. They also want to know how ZANU-PF got the phone numbers of voters, along with which polling stations they will be using. Pastor Ivan Mawarire, the man behind the This Flag movement that inspired Zimbabweans to speak out against longtime ruler Robert Mugabe, was also at the march. He is afraid ZEC is perceived as favoring ZANU-PF.
ZEC needs to up their game in terms of giving confidence. But right now, we are a few days away from the elections. It's too late. It seems as if they have already played on behalf of ZANU-PF. And you can tell that they are playing for ZANU-PF, because ZANU-PF is not complaining about anything. Everyone is saying, listen, we want a free and fair election. Yeah.
Yeah. Mawarire says they are determined to have a free and fair election on July 30th. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
The UN Security Council is expected to vote this week on expanding sanctions and establishing an arms embargo on South Sudan. The current UN sanctions expire Sunday after the Security Council approved a 45-day review last month of a cessation of hostilities. That resolution also demanded an end to the fighting by June 30th. President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar agreed to a ceasefire that went into effect on June 30th, but was reportedly violated within hours, with both sides accusing the other of attacking. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres is expected to report on whether the fighting has stopped and if a peace agreement has been reached. The French news agency reports if the 15-member Security Council passes the resolution, it would establish an arms embargo for South Sudan until May 31st, 2019. Nigeria's President Muhammadu Buhari has signed an executive order to freeze assets of individuals involved in corruption cases. Buhari said at the signing ceremony for Executive Order No. 6 that, unfortunately, corruption is everywhere at all levels of government and every stratum of our society. The president's office says the order is not to permanently seize assets, but to deny suspects access to property in a way that would interfere with the investigative and judicial process. The opposition People's Democratic Party, however, alleges the order is illegal and a dangerous step. PDP members are considering legal action against the asset seizure order. Akim Bello is a senior lecturer in the Department of Public Law at the University of Lagos. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonier about the implications of the executive order and says existing law enforcement bodies already do the same job the new order is supposed to do.
My immediate reaction is shock. Shock because we have some provisions in our statute books under the EFCC Act, under the ICPC Act, which the agencies, these are the leading agencies in prosecution of economic and financial crimes and corruption, which they have been using to effectively preserve assets of suspects pending investigation, pending trial. And the courts have also been very creative in using these provisions to effectively preserve assets subject to corruption investigation or corruption trial pending the determination of the cases. So that's why I said I was shocked when I heard that there's an executive order on preservation of assets relating to corrupt practices. Because there are some laws in existence, and the courts have been using those laws effectively to provide a platform for preserving assets pending investigation and trial.
The opposition party, the People's Democratic Party, says the executive order is unconstitutional and a slide to fascism. The party says it will go to court to challenge it. What's your take on this, sir?
They are free to go to court to challenge it. That is the beauty of a democratic system. But as to the order being unconstitutional, to a certain extent, I agree that there are some provisions in that order which, in my opinion, cannot stand serious legal scrutiny. Now, the order provides for preservation of assets, and the office of the Attorney General is a coordinating office in the preservation of assets. It says that the AG can initiate proceedings to protect and preserve assets. The question I ask myself is, what of those agencies in the front line of prosecution of economic and financial crimes and corruption? The EFCC and the ICPCs. These are agencies that have laws empowering them to investigate and prosecute corruption. And they are independent agencies. They do not take directives from the Office of the Attorney General. And what this order is seeking to do is to empower the Attorney General of the Federation to exercise powers which the Constitution has not vested in that office. The Attorney General of the Federation is the chief prosecuting officer for the federal government in Nigeria. And by the Constitution, he can take over any criminal prosecution. But he cannot, on a day-to-day basis, supervise the exercise of prosecutorial powers. Because prosecutorial powers vested in EFCC is independent. EFCC is an independent prosecution authority. It is not a department of the Attorney General of the Federation.
On the other hand, this presidential spokesman, Garba Shehu, said the order is not to forfeit people's properties, but rather to temporarily deny access, which can be used to corrupt or interfere with the investigative and judicial processes.
The order is not saying that assets will be forfeited. The order is saying that steps can be taken by the Attorney General to preserve assets pending investigation and trial. But like I have said, these are already matters dealt with by extant legal provisions. And these legal provisions vest power in independent prosecuting agencies to bring applications to the court, which they have been doing effectively to preserve assets subject to corruption investigation. So what is the role of the AGF? The AGF is not the headmaster of these prosecuting agencies. The only power he has over there is the power vested by Section 174 of the Constitution to take over or discontinue any criminal proceedings. Like I said, the AGF does not have any constitutional power to superintend on a daily basis the activities of anti-corruption agencies. They are independent.
That was Akeem Bello, senior lecturer in the Department of Public Law at the University of Lagos. He spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye in Lagos. Fifteen past the hour, you're listening to Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. The last team for the World Cup final is being determined right now, with England and Croatia, the surprise of the tournament, playing for the right to face France for the title. So far, England is leading Croatia 1-0. The loser will play Belgium Saturday for third place. The championship match is on Sunday. For more details on World Cup action, be sure to stay tuned for the Sunny Side of Sports. One of Africa's preeminent leadership business schools graduated its first group of Pan-African students last weekend in an eventful ceremony in the Rwandan capital, Kigali. President Paul Kagame and renowned business leader and philanthropist Strive Masiwa presided over the occasion. From Kigali, VOA's Ruben Chama reports.
The theme of the event was Building Leaders for the African Century. In his address to the students, philanthropist and businessman Strive Masiyiwa urged governments and institutions to invest in leadership skills needed to transform Africa and the world.
An institution like this is critical.
This is the fulfillment of the vision of Pan-Africanism. You listened to the roll call from Nigeria, from Ghana, from Namibia, from South Africa. That's the unique, that's what's unique about this program. And that's why we have to build more programs like this. So for people like me and the Aliko Dangotes, we lick our lips when we see institutions like this because we know this is where we're going to come and get the people we need.
Rwandan President Paul Kagame said Africa's solutions are available to the continent's problems if young leaders from across the region are granted opportunities to work and develop their talents.
For example, the African Union is steadily implementing our institutional reform as we continue to pursue greater integration and economic prosperity. To date, 49 countries have signed the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. More than half of member states have also signed the agreement on the free movement of people.
Fred Swanika, a Ghanaian-born educationist and the founder of the African Leadership University, gave his reflections on what the inaugural graduation means for the continent.
What is consistent here is we are only picking the people that we believe have the highest potential for impact. We are saying let's get these people who are the most driven, the most, you know, passionate, the most capable, the most ethical, who can really be our leaders, and let's take them through a process and then engage them in a network so that they can actually apply the leadership skills, the entrepreneurial skills to solve our problems.
According to Swanika, the ALU School of Business offers world-class business education tailored to the economic and cultural conditions on the continent. It is a part of the African Leadership University's larger mission to develop 3 million ethical leaders by 2060. Purity Kagwiria from Kenya was among the graduating class of 2018. Here, she explains why she chose to undertake MBA studies at the ALU School of Business in Rwanda.
It's the only program that's very Africa-centered. You get to read case studies from Africa that are focused, like we've done some on Kenya Power, done some on Nigeria, how the government works. Today morning we did one on Rwanda, on how President Kagame works with his top 300 executives in the government. So you get to actually see how problems on the African continent are being solved, and you get to think about how can you also be part of those processes.
In total, 38 professionals from over 15 different African countries across Africa received master's degree in business administration and management. The ALUSB MBA is an Africa-focused world-class executive development program offered in collaboration with a number of internationally recognized partners. The program, blends global best practices in business education punctuated with African case studies to deliver a tailored program geared towards building critical skills essential for doing business in Africa. Ruben Chama reporting for VOA News in Kigali, Rwanda.
The U.S. House of Representatives is taking a public stand against slavery in Libya. It has passed a resolution condemning slave auctions and the exploitation of migrants and refugees as forced laborers. The resolution was introduced in December by Representative Karen Bass, a ranking member of the House Foreign Affairs Subcommittee on Africa. The move calls for all parties of the Libyan political agreement to investigate and eradicate slave auctions and forced labor and manage migration flows and detention centers in a humane way. They are also asked to look into how funds earned through the transfer or exploitation of migrants support conflict in Libya. The resolution also asks participants in the Libya conflict to allow the United Nations to monitor and report on migrants and refugees, and it asks that sanctions be expanded against any person or entity involved in slave auctions and forced labor. The Congressional Black Caucus has also met with Libya's ambassador to Washington to demand an immediate investigation into slave auctions in the country. The Arab Center in Washington released the results of the 2017-2018 Arab Public Opinion Survey in 11 Arab countries. The findings reflected the opinions of about 19,000 respondents in face-to-face interviews. The survey showed wide dissatisfaction of political and economic situation in the Arab countries. It also revealed the lowest ranking in recent years for the Arabs' public's view on U.S. policies. Shibli Tellami is a professor of peace and development at the University of Maryland and an expert in public opinion polls. He explained to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi the survey's main findings.
There's a lot more variation across the Arab world. For example, in terms of people feeling free to speak or not, criticize the government or not, you have a very large number in Tunisia who believe that, very few in the Sudan who feel they're free to do so. So there's variation across the Arab world. There's also a sense that Arabs want to see democracy and they understand what democracy is. That is, they understand that it entails equal rights and civil liberties. And in our previous polls, it also there's evidence that when you ask people which are the most democratic countries, they typically identify Western countries. So we know that there's hunger for democracy. The one question that clearly indicates a level of discontent beyond the economic issue is still always big for the public, and we see a huge dissatisfaction in places like Sudan and even Jordan regarding the economy. But the issue of political apathy, where overwhelming majorities in every Arab country, very few people who say they participate in politics, and that's an indication, obviously, of feeling irrelevant in the political systems in the Arab world, and that's certainly troubling, and it's something that is indicative, I think, of a mood that is very prevalent across the region.
Talking about the mood, 51% of Sudanese, 41% of Moroccans, 28% of Tunisians, and 18% of Egyptians wanted to immigrate to another country. What do you make of that?
That was fascinating result. Even though there's variation, as you note, with particularly in the Sudan and Morocco, there are larger numbers, it's really hard to tell exactly what's driving it. We do know that in this poll, there was another question related to what are the sources of discontent, and clearly the economy was number one in many countries, especially high. And there is a relationship between those who identify the economy as the biggest problem and those who want to immigrate. So we know that certainly there's parts that are political, but economic discontent seems to be a driving force.
70% of Arabs see the U.S. as a major threat, and U.S. foreign policy assessment ranked at the bottom with only 3% describing it as positive.
What we have seen, of course, is huge anti-Americanism following the Iraq War. We know the Iraq War, not really 9/11, people misunderstand, it was the Iraq War that generated such a backlash against the U.S., and it still does, because the Iraq War has not ended for most Arabs, because it has reshuffled the deck in the Middle East in ways that were not good for the Arab world, and people resent it to this day across the region and see it even as the source of all ill. And all of it was unnecessary. It was conducted by the U.S. But what is interesting is that we had a period where there was a slight improvement in attitudes to the U.S. They've always negative since then. They have not been positive at all. But there were slight improvements in the early years of the Obama administration. Then we went down. And we thought they could never get worse. And lo and behold, they get worse. This is the lowest we have seen it, both in terms of favorable views of the U.S. and in terms of where the U.S. foreign policy is ranked in comparison to other countries like China and Turkey and even Russia and even Iran, below even Iran. So that's an interesting one at a time when there is a sense that Arab governments want to work more closely with the U.S. and particularly with the Trump administration right now, and at a time when there is a kind of a narrative out there, a narrative that says that the Middle East priorities have shifted, the public priorities in the Arab world have shifted. People are now focused on Iran as a threat, not on the U.S. and not on Israel. Well, as it turns out, when you look at public opinion and you ask them to rank the biggest threat to them, is still Israel is number one, the U.S. is number two, Iran is number three. There are variations across Arab countries, but that's even true of the Kuwaitis in the Gulf. In Saudi Arabia, the picture is a little bit different, but that's in part due to the fact that you have over 40% of people who don't answer that question.
Shibli Talami is a professor of peace and development at the University of Maryland and an expert in public opinion polls. He was speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Thomas Blondet, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, the 31st African Union Summit has wrapped up in Mauritania with advisory decisions on Libya, Somalia and South Sudan. The significance of the African Union with Deputy Chairperson Kwesi Kwarti on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's up, Africa? I'm Jackson Bungani in Washington.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on The Voice of America.
Listen, we need to discuss what's going on in your communities, issues that affect you.
Are you involved?
Are you engaged in transforming your society?
Today, right now, this is your platform.
Let us know what you've been up to.
Check us out on Facebook. Drop us a line.
It's Upfront Wednesdays at 17:30 UTC
right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.